better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
We finally got a line out for Arkansas, Nevada, September 5th in Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium. This comes via from Circa Sports. The Razorbacks are 9-point favorites against the Nevada Wolfpack. Now, I saw this. I think, Tommy, you were in the realm. We had this conversation the other day. You said 3-4, and I think I said 10 or 11, if I remember that correctly. So we're kind of in between that number. So you see this yesterday. And it's really the first, to my knowledge, the first Vegas line I've seen associated with this game and then some other SEC games. I know that you've seen some places come out with the big-time college football games in week one, but we haven't seen a lot of stuff relative to Arkansas, Nevada. We finally got a little morsel. We finally got a little crumb. Arkansas, 9-point favorites against Nevada, and that's where we're going to start the conversation this morning. Here on the Morning Rush, 877-377-6963, the number always to call or text in, always streaming live on hitthatline.com. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook if you want to watch our video stream. If you have a smart speaker, just say play ESPN Arkansas. We're also on the TuneIn app as well. Tom Murphy joins us at 7:15. Richard Davenport joins us on a Recruiting Thursday at 8 o'clock. And we're brought to you this morning by Breeden RV because it's time for the annual trade-up event going on through the month of July. Take trade-up and get up to $5,000 over NADA trade-in value. Take advantage of rock-bottom prices right now on all new and used travel trailers, fifth wheels, and motorhomes. Trade-up and get free maintenance for life on everything new. They're also going to take care of your service needs on all makes and models that are new. Shop today online at BreedenRV.com and then come see Ransom in the Game at Breeden RV between Van Buren and Alma on Alma Highway. Breeden RV, where adventures begin. So 9-point favorites, Tommy. What are your thoughts on that, man?
Well, I'll borrow Ruskin's phrase. Based on what? How? I mean, and this is Vegas. Knowing there, I mean, this probably isn't even available if we were in a casino today to get much action on.
I don't even know if I got to look up where Circus Sports is.
But, you know, and if I was a betting man on college football, I would take Nevada in the 9 points. I mean, based on what would you, I mean, Nevada's a team picked.
Shut up!
Based on what? Nevada's a team picked to win their conference, and based on Arkansas's history the last few years, there's no confidence that this team is going to beat at home even a group of five team. Because we've seen them lose to teams just like Nevada. Now, I think the better bet is, will this game happen? It might be a better bet than the 9 points, but if I was gun to head $1,000 on it today, I'm taking Nevada in the points.
Where's your unfound loyalty, man? Where's the
it stops unmapped in my back pocket.
That's a good point. Yeah, but you won't bet anything. I every single, maybe this year will be different. Every single year you can invest again, you can invest Jenkins' salary in the game. If you want to do that.
I don't think Jenkins is on board with that.
Jenkins, what do you think?
He says no.
No, of course not.
What about
would
if
you
he
take,
bet on
which way would you go on this though? 9 points.
Oh, I would take no, I'd go with you.
Yeah, today, July the 9th. What we know right now.
How many games last year did we win by 9?
not a lot.
There you go. Yeah. How many games
how many
did we
games
won by
you
9
win
in the
all?
Past 3 years?
Not a lot.
One by, what, 21 and then, what was the other? Could you beat Colorado State by 21 in the fourth and then, I don't remember the other one.
Eastern Illinois and was another one you won.
It was 2 years ago. It was 55-20.
Well, you said, I mean, last 2 years you've only won four games.
It was 55-20 against Eastern Illinois. You beat Colorado State by 21.
Tulsa.
That was a greasy game, just a gross game. But, yeah, there hadn't been a lot. So,
right.
So you two would go Nevada, yeah. 9 points, but at least take the points, not necessarily take the money line, but –
I mean, if you just quickly say, no, Arkansas and lay the points, that's just you're putting your Razorback glasses on.
Well, here's what
just blind loyalty.
What do I always tell you when it comes to betting with the Razorbacks? What do I always say?
I don't know. I didn't know you had a
bet against the Arkansas Razorbacks, so you win either way.
Oh, the happy hedge.
The happy hedge. Yeah, you bet against Arkansas, and you got a chance to win either way. Now, I don't mean bet thousands or...
Well, I don't know if there's a happy hedge when you're playing Nevada, but I get the sentiment of what you're saying.
You're telling me this fan base wouldn't be happy if you beat Nevada in game one?
I mean, you're not going to be mad, but I mean, this isn't like you're beating Texas or Texas A&M or Alabama. I mean, it's Nevada.
You said the other day there's a chance they'd lose to Nevada. So I would take Nevada in the points. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think this fan base would be happy if they'd be ecstatic if you opened up.
In fact, what's the money line on this thing? Nevada in the money line might be the better play.
You won't bet your hard-earned money on that money line.
I don't bet on sports, but that might be. You're talking about value. What would the money line? Is there a money line on this thing yet? Straight up,
I'm sure there's not. But you'd be smarter just to take the spread.
No.
By gosh.
Forget the spread. Give me straight up Nevada.
Right, and then fall through. Let's go.
With the odds.
You two bet on the money line right now.
You can't bet right now.
You can bet on this right now, but you can't bet the money line.
Well, yeah,
right now.
What Bahama island is it in? What casino is this in?
Vegas.
Is it in Vegas?
Yeah. So it's in Vegas.
You're fired up this morning.
But no, I just...
Well, he talks about betting for a man that never bets.
Yeah, that doesn't bet. So
it's all a facade.
I'm going to get back on old Bet Yours Racing because we still got like $1,000. You didn't waste that account, did you?
Yeah, I lost it on
horse race. You depleted it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer. So the line is -9. We'll get into some other SEC lines coming up. We got an early call this morning from PA and Texarkana. PA, this is the earliest I think you've ever called, man. I'm glad you're up this morning. And
time must have your attention already.
Well, I got up early this morning, and I've been up for a while. And I just heard Tommy. My father-in-law was probably the best football gambler, that I've ever seen. He won money every year. It just depends on how good a year he had. It wasn't whether he was going to win or lose, it's just how much he was going to win. And his strongest, he had these percentages of, 4 points or more, a road team that has won, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. You just go down the list. All these situations, he had it down to...
He was Phil Steele before there was Phil Steele.
It's not win, it's cover. Yeah. 62% of the time, 70%.
Gotcha.
Let me get to the point here, and I'm rambling. Anyway, his number one thing was, he told me, he said, if a line looks too good to be true, it usually is. In other words, I'm sitting there, I'm like you. 9 points? Arkansas favored by 9 points? We won 4 games in 2 years and squeaked by, got beaten by San Diego State. And, they know that. And they don't pay those air conditioner bills 24 hours a day and 7 days a week and have those twinkling lights going all day, every day. By being wrong, by making the line so obvious and still being wrong. Arkansas, the bet is to take Arkansas -9 and put everything you got on it. Ooh. Because that's, to me, I'm like,
let's go.
That looks so obvious. I would bet that on Nevada.
Again. Based on what?
They know that, though. Yeah, yeah. They know you and I, the average Joe better would take that way.
Yeah. Man.
Well, again, you got to remember, Vegas isn't trying to predict the final score. Vegas with a betting line, and thanks for the call, PA, we got to run. The betting line is designed to do what, Ty? Get equal amounts of action on both sides of the wager. Vegas wants to do is get 100% of the losers and 10% of the winners. So don't confuse a betting line with a prediction of an outcome. Now, sometimes it works that way, but that's not Vegas's intention when they set betting lines.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
So when I saw that statistic, I was a little surprised that he had played for that many head coaches, but, I mean, you think about it, it's Barry Lunny Jr., Chad Morris, now Sam Pittman, Kevin Sumlin, and Jimbo Fisher, right? Those are the five. So, I mean, that's
Barry Lunny was an interim coach after Chad Morris got hired, but I get the point. I mean, he was an interim head coach. But if you want to count it, that's fine. I mean, that sensationalizes it a little more.
Yeah, but it makes, I mean, you think about it, Tommy, he had him for what, three games?
Two games.
So, I mean, that's still a transition of coaches. And when you think about that, so since I've been here, you've been my boss. Mm-hmm. Now, I've done a show with Phil. I've done a show with you and John, and now it's me, you, and Jenkins. So that's a little bit of transition, but it's not a lot because the staple has just been basically working with and for you. So I think it's difficult sometimes when you transition philosophies from coach to head coach, and sometimes you just tune it out. Like when you get a certain level of teachings or whatever, and it doesn't work. Like there was... Now, the Texas A&M failures were not the same as the Arkansas failures, obviously. You would love to be in Texas A&M positions, but the projections of where the Aggies were supposed to be compared to where they were still technically a failure. Now, Arkansas's failure were much more out there and much more that, but at a certain point, if you're Keen Boyd and others, you're looking around like, when is this going to work? When am I going to get a head coach that actually knows what he's talking about, that actually gets this thing back on track? And that's why Rakeem Boyd... He mentioned about Sam Pittman being the guy, the dude that you hope that those aren't just words. Those actually translate to what happens on the field.
This kind of reminds me of Mason Jones' story. We were talking about this with him. I mean, he played for five different coaches in five different years, going back from high school through junior college, prep school, junior college, Mike Anderson to Eric Mullen. I mean, he went through those same transitions and had to work through that. We talked with him about that when he was on the show a while back. It's the difficulty of finding out what's, you know, I think recalibrating or understanding how you've got to change your ways to meet the expectations of the new coach, because the way they're going to go about the business, the way you're expected to perform personally and professionally, both as a player and as a person within an organization, you got to figure that out, and you got to do it quickly, because everybody wants things done a little bit different. Not just the terminology of how the offense is going to be for Rakeem Boyd, but, you know, how you're expected to conduct yourself just in the four walls of the program.
I'm going to be honest. When Rakeem Boyd was making his decision, I remember when Bobby Portis and Michael Qualls were making theirs. And especially since I heard Bobby say, I think I'm coming back after the press conference following the North Carolina loss, which again, that's you can take that with a grain of salt. Emotional moment, just coming off a loss in the NCAA tournament. He made the right decision going to the NBA. I had pretty high confidence that Bobby and Michael were going to come back. I just thought. I heard some things. I was friends with a couple people in school that told me certain things. With Rakeem, well, you and I were in the same boat. We were like, no chance he comes back. Absolutely not. And then it just shocked everyone to see that note, because you like he put out big announcement coming up later today, and it's like, okay, he's gonna announce he's moving on to the NFL. And then you see this note and you're reading, you're like, oh my gosh, he's coming back. And again, what you're hoping is the decision he made benefits him for the NFL. Unfortunately, he's been injured throughout his career, injury riddled with injuries. You hope that he can have a healthy season and show scouts what he can be about. And you hope, again, we've talked about this before, Kendall Bryles just gets him the football, Tommy.
Well, and I think that's what it's all about, is he sees the opportunity, because I think this is all about the feedback. And I think Sam Pittman laid this out in that most recent Zoom call we all watched that he did with the media about the feedback they got. And I think one of the things he pointed out, and I don't remember it verbatim, but I think they're going to try to get Rakeem the ball out of the backfield in a receiving situation. That was one of the things, you might remember it a little more verbatim than me, but I think one of the things the NFL wanted to see from Rakeem Boyd was his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. He didn't get the chance to do that last year. They're going to try to put him in those situations. So, clearly, the feedback from the NFL did not put Rakeem maybe in the spot he thought he could be in, and it didn't maximize that. Coming back, being in this offense with Kendall Bryles, Sam Pittman, I think he was comfortable that he could go nowhere but up.
You mentioned that Zoom call. Monteric Brown, Buster Brown, said that he thinks Rakeem Boyd is the best running back in this conference. Obviously, as a teammate, you're going to give your other teammates as much credit and as much laud as possible, but This is not just an Arkansas fan thought, an Arkansas player thought, an Arkansas coach's thought. Rakeem Boyd is highly respected in this conference. Second team All-SEC by Athlon. I don't know where he is in other publications and other stuff, but I mean, that's pretty high credibility. Now, you'd love to see him on that first team. We'll see what happens with Kylan Hill. We'll see what happens with Najee Harris and some others. But if Rakeem Boyd, given the right opportunity, you hope that he can take advantage of the touches. Now, you don't want to overwork him. You don't want to give him 30-plus touches a game. He doesn't have the same stamina as an Eddie Lacy or a Trent Richardson or a Derrick Henry at Alabama. That's why you're hoping that Traylon Smith and some others, TJ Hammonds, will be able to come in and supplement those carries. You're hoping that Rakeem Boyd can be a guy that has around 20 carries, over 100 yards, and then shows you a flash or two, which he's shown you the ability to do. He's averaging what, Tommy, like 5.8 yards per carry career at Arkansas? I mean, it's a relatively high number, so he's shown the ability that he can be a game breaker. It's just a matter now if he's given the opportunities, is the offensive line gels, and if they have a passing attack that at least scares opposing defenses where they aren't loading the box against Rakeem Boyd like they would against Darren McFadden and Felix Jones.
What's the number one thing for Boyd this year?
Sometimes you ask rhetorical questions. I ask real questions. I would think just the offensive line, right?
Staying healthy, I think, is number one.
Okay,
you got to play. I mean, if there's 12 games, you need to play 13. You know, you got to get your touches. You got to get your care. You got to get as much on tape this year. Can't be dinged up and sidelined with ankles and hamstrings or anything that might prevent you from losing 20% or 25% of your season. I think, and sometimes it's preparing your body in the off season, doing the work you're doing right now to just be durable. You were talking about the durability of him. That's having guys like Traylon Smith, Amonte Spivey, TJ Hammonds that you went through a minute ago that can give you the break that the coaches are confident to, hey, if I need to put this guy in, particularly in a pass blocking situation, and have the confidence that his backup is going to be able to chip off that linebacker that's blitzing through without Boyd being in there, that you're confident in putting that in there. Because what you can't have of your Boyd is you miss some of the meat of your schedule because you got an ankle problem or a knee problem or whatever it would be, a hand problem. You can probably play with that. But you can't have anything particularly below the waist sideline you for a number of games this year because this is it, and you need as much tape as you can get. Him personally, that's what's the most important thing is, as you said earlier, durability and as many snaps as he can get this year to put on tape.
And I gave him less credit than he deserves. He averaged actually at Arkansas 6.3 yards per carry. So this is a guy, again, that has shown you that he can play at the SEC level. And like you mentioned, you hope the depth, the backups that didn't talk about Amonte Spivey and some others, you hope those guys come through because they need to be able to rest Rakeem Boyd and then not put him in situations. And then also this past season, he had some times where he would call to get off the field. I know that his fitness, that hasn't been mentioned as much, but you talk about his pass blocking and you talk about just him catching the ball in the backfield. That would be something to also improve. Yeah. Now, he said, you mentioned the Zoom call with Sam Pittman. He did say his body, he feels like it's the best it's ever felt, and he hasn't really had an offseason at this point. Yes, they've been working out and stuff, but they didn't go through spring ball and all that. So maybe that's good. I know that can be a blessing in disguise in a sense that some of these guys, yes, they weren't playing. Yes, they weren't getting into with the offense, but maybe that can be good for the potential injuries that they would have suffered and maybe not going through that, which, again, Arkansas can't afford injuries to Rakeem, to Traylon, to Trey, to any of those big-time guys because they don't have the depth built behind them right now to afford to go through the season.
That's
like
a great point because you think about every year, and I can't name you the list, but it seems like every year we talk about somebody's loss to an ACL, a knee problem, something that requires surgery, whether it's a shoulder, whatever it is, coming out of spring, an injury that happens in practice in spring. And at least by not having spring practice, you avoid that. You hope to get through August, if all the practices go as scheduled, and avoid those type of injuries. But at least you're going into practices beginning next week, or at least the walkthroughs. You get to more traditional practices, you hope, in August. Probably the healthiest you'll ever be because no one's coming off a spring practice injury that required surgery, that sidelined them for the first X number of weeks of the season, or going to make them limited. You know, a lot of times, how many times are players limited or have to have a no-contact jersey in August because they're still rehabbing something from a surgery in the offseason. Should have everybody good based on the fact that that is one positive of not having spring football.
And you mentioned injuries in the offseason. I think about injuries either in the offseason or during the season, dating back to like 2006, the Peyton Hillis injury, the Marcus Munch injury, the Greg Childs injury, Jonathan Williams injury. I mean, they've just had, you mentioned, just detrimental injuries that have hurt this football team that you wonder, hey, if this guy doesn't get injured, what happens? Arkansas, again, doesn't have the depth of an Alabama, an LSU, or Georgia where they can just wipe their brow. I remember when Alabama, this was a few years back, they lost like two starting linebackers and still won a national championship. They lost them both to ACL injuries. Like, if Arkansas was to lose two starting linebackers, their defense would fall apart. But for Alabama, Nick Saban and whoever the DC was at the time, they were able to combat those injuries and still produce a team that ended up winning the national championship. So it goes to show you how important depth is. So again, you're hoping with all the want in your heart that Arkansas does not suffer an injury. And we're knocking on wood right now saying that, because you can't have that this year, especially based on new head coach, new DC, new OC. You don't have your system really in place yet. So you can't afford to lose a vital piece for the 2020 season, not just based on your depth, but because on everything going on with the coronavirus right now, and the fact that you have so many new coaches on that football team.
You know, we started this conversation with Rakeem Boyd, and you know, just kind of going back to some of the things with him. You know, 6.3 yards per carry. We get so focused on yards per carry, touchdowns, rushing attempts, some of the measurable stats, but some of the more important things that scouts are looking at on tape are, how does he pick up the blitz? How good a blocking back are you? We talked earlier about catching the football out of the backfield. How good are you? There are so many other little things that you just got to polish and put on tape that are not necessarily stat driven. You know, the things that you can do that scouts and the trained football eye are going to pick up on. I'll be interested to see how much they expand his role and expand his game this year under Kendall Briles, because These are smart coaches. They know exactly what the NFL, and they've got the feedback on him, so they know exactly what they need to do to help elevate him. And I think they'll work some of those things into his game and try to polish all of that up.
And we've talked about how you just got to get your playmakers the ball, whether it's Trey Knox, whether it's Mike Woods, whether it's Rakeem Boyd, whether it's Treylon Burks. You hope that Kendall Briles will be able to use them in a number of different formations. You bring Rakeem out of the backfield. You line him up in the slot. You put Mike Woods in one-on-one situation. I mean, you just want those matchups to take advantage. And Kendall Briles over the years has found those matchups. He finds those guys that either have favorable one-on-one matchups, that if you take advantage of an inside zone, that is something that he has been really good. The veer and shoot philosophy that he's run over the years, you take a lot of deep shots, and then you gun them up the rear. I mean, it's just got to be something that you hope that this, again, can work in the SEC. It's worked everywhere else. It's worked in the Big 12. It's worked in the American. It's worked in, to an extent, the ACC. It's worked in these other conferences. Now, can it work in this conference? Can you use an all-SEC guy in Rakeem Boyd? Can you use a potential first-round draft pick in Trey Knox? Can you use one of the most exciting players that you've had in quite some time in Treylon Burks? Can you use just a solid possession guy in Mike Woods that can take the top off the defense occasionally? Can you take advantage of that? Chad Morris didn't do that. Can Kendall Briles do that?
Can you do it with a roster that's you're not going to out Jimmy and Joe, the other teams in the SEC West, very often, particularly this year and maybe even next, right? So how many games is Arkansas going to walk into where Arkansas's two deep is better than their opponent's two deep in a conference game? Probably not one time this year. So can you out, how many coaches are you going to out scheme in this league? I mean, at some point, schemes are great. Veer and shoot and all these things you're talking about, that's great. But you got to have enough players at this level to do it, because whether you like it or not, the best coaches on the defensive side of the ball in the country are in this league. And you better, and the best defensive players at all three levels in the country are in this league. So at some point, all this scheme and all this X's and O's stuff is wonderful, but you got to have players to execute it at a level that you're going to go up against.
One of the things that Nick Saban will tell you, if you watch those Nick Saban documentaries and you've seen the picture in the background of the Arkansas playbook that he and his defensive coordinator and coaching staff were required to study, Bobby Petrino was a masterful technician. He was able to find the mismatches. He was able to take advantage of his opportunities. And not only did he have the talent that he recruited, and he wasn't just like this masterful recruiter, but you're mentioning the Jimmy and Joes. He had Tyler. He had Ryan. He had Greg. He had Joe. He had Jarius. I mean, on and on and on. They had that on top of Bobby Petrino's tactics.
And now, it made you prepare for more.
Exactly.
Like that playbook you're referencing that was, you know, a foot thick.
It made it more difficult. So you don't necessarily, as Tommy mentioned, you're too deep in the SEC doesn't scare anyone. Like if it, Arkansas doesn't have many scared off the bus guys that when they walk off. Now, they've got a few. I think, obviously, Trey Knox being at 6'5", being as intimidating, being as forceful as he is one of those guys. Dalton Wagner being like 6'7", maybe 6'9", like some of those guys. But like when you look at other SEC rosters, Arkansas is not as intimidating as some of the big dogs up there. But that doesn't mean you can't outbeat teams. Now, we heard from Tony Bua the other day. There are teams they went up against every single week that were just better top to bottom roster.
It's still about execution.
It's still about execution. It's still about outworking. It's about, yes, it's about the Jimmys and Joes. We always bring that up. But you also have to have the X's and O's, and you also have to have the effort. And we've talked about what Tony Bua said, how you have to give the effort. You have to give the energy. You're playing for an entire state. We also have to have a game plan worthy that can actually get it done. Players can give effort. If you're not going to put a game plan together that can win you a football game, it doesn't matter. Now, Arkansas, they didn't necessarily have the roster. They didn't necessarily have the X's and O's with Chad Morris, and they didn't have the effort. So when you go 0-for-3 on those, what do you think is going to happen on the football field? You're going to go 2-12 back-to-back seasons. You need a couple of those. You don't need all three every single game. You just need a couple of those. And you didn't see many of those. You didn't even see two or three of those more games. It was maybe 1 or 0 the majority of these past two seasons.
How quickly can they learn this offense, get lined up right, have the right players on the field for the right play call? I mean, you think about all these things that seem basic and simple. But again, you didn't have spring practice. You're going to have these walkthroughs. How much retention can you have coming out of Zoom meetings? How much have the players kind of learned on their own? You don't have a Ben Hicks necessarily that knew the offense from the coaches before. You know, Felipe Franks, this is new to him. So there's not that. Not that it worked out with Hicks, but you had that element with him. So, I mean, there's just a lot of things to wonder about. But I think, again, I'm banking on, and maybe blindly, these are smart coaches. These are coaches that have been successful where they've been. And I think they're going to figure out a plan and a way to make it work for these players as best they can for this season.
With the players, I'm still concerned a little bit based on what I mentioned with Rakeem Boyd. When you go through Kevin Sumlin, you go through his community. I actually don't think he played for Jimbo Fisher. I think it was Independence Community College. Then Chad Morris, then Barry Lunny, then Sam Pittman. Yes, he can say the thing. Sam Pittman's the guy. Sam Pittman's the dude. But if you continuously have a new head coach, a new running backs coach, a new OC or whatever, sometimes you just get to a point where you just tune out. Now, it doesn't seem like that's the case with Rakeem necessarily. He came back. He wanted to play for Pitt. He wanted to play for Bryles. But I'm just telling you, when you go through a process of a continuous new boss, a continuous new coach, it gets old. And at a certain point, you're like, we're not having success. So what makes you think that this guy isn't going to give me that? Now, I hope the players don't think that way. But I'm just telling you, that's in the back of your head. Even though they seem to like Sam Pittman, even though they tell you the locker room's bought in, what happens if this team loses a couple games early? Mm-hmm. What happens if this team goes on another big SEC losing streak, which they're at 19 right now? What if that number gets up to like 24, 25, and then they're just like, man, they let go of the rope? You can't have them let go of the rope. There has to be some sign, some sense, and some sense of togetherness from that coaching staff with the players that their cohesion, despite the obstacles they're going to face, is not going to break. You can't let it break like it did with Chad Morris. After the Kentucky game, I actually had a buddy who works for Channel 4 in Nashville text me last night just out of the blue. It's like, hey, what happened in the Arkansas-Mississippi State game last year? I was like, why are you? He's like, I'm watching it right now. It's like, they don't even look like they care. I was like, yeah, they let go of the rope after the Kentucky game. You can't let this team let go of the rope. You got to keep this team together. Otherwise, you're going to see what you saw last season. You're going to see what you saw the season before, and that's going to be how it is for seasons to come.
Somehow, Sam Pittman has to figure out with his players, and if he can figure it out with the fans, that's a bonus, but particularly within the locker room, how do you wipe the slate clean? We keep bringing it up. Others bring this SEC losing streak and everything that's happened the last 2 years and everything that's everything that's happened in the past. You kind of got to wipe the slate clean and say, all right, we're starting clean and moving forward and take the because what every time you bring that up, this long dark cloud of losing games, that just adds to the pressure, right? And I don't think the coaches are focusing in on bringing that up. Hey guys, we got to snap this losing streak. You know, now if it had happened under him as head coach, like it happened under Bielema, you know, that would be one thing. You know, if we're having this conversation in a year, that's another conversation. But man, if you're Sam Pittman, you got to figure out how to internally and externally try to erase that narrative, at least for now. Because I think that just adds more pressure to the situation they don't need.
Oh, it 100% does. But you brought up the fact that, yes, Sam Pittman was here technically as an offensive line coach, but he wasn't the one as the head coach. Like, right. You can only have so much of an impact on a football team as the offensive line coach. So what happened in the past is not his fault. Like, unless he was doing way more in the past that we know about, then that's not his fault. So you can't, obviously, and Sam Pittman's not going to blame himself, but he's also not going
to
say...
Go back to 2015. Well, that's 5 years
ago. Yeah, but he's also not going to say, well, they did this in the past, we're going to do it my way, blah, blah, blah. He is, at least from what I've heard, has not blamed what happens in the past. We heard what Moore said. I hope he doesn't make a statement like that where he kind of separates the players from this past couple years and then kind of takes his recruits, take his players. I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's smart about that. But again, like you're saying, you have to get over that losing streak, regardless if you mention it every week in practice, regardless if it doesn't say anything. That has to be a monkey off your back, just like the Texas A&M series, just like the Alabama series, which is a long farther off. They're not beating Alabama this year, sorry. But you have to get these monkeys on your back one game, one season at a time. It's not going to all happen at once. This ain't 98, but you need a positive reinforcement in 2020.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Let's bring in Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, we mentioned it first part of the show. Arkansas, 9-point favorites via Circa Sports against Nevada. At this point in time, July the 9th, if you had a grand to bet, you go Nevada laying the points, or are you taking the Hogs to cover, man?
Oh, Ty, put me on the spot right away. That looks like an inflated number to me. Nevada's, they got a returning quarterback and a lot of – I did a couple of stories having talked to Coach Norvell earlier in the summer, and they're going to have a pretty loaded offense and one of their better defenses. Arkansas is at home, so they should be a favorite, but 9 looks a little inflated to me. But you know what? We'll know a lot more about both teams here in about a month, I guess, and I could speak more eloquently on that subject.
Tom, if Arkansas was to lose that game, how do you convince the fan base? How do you convince that locker room if you're Sam Pittman that the season's not over?
Well, he would tell you that, you know, this turnaround, it's going to be a process. And I'm sure they're going to have a good game plan for that game. And if Nevada happens to come in here and win, they're going to keep plugging away. I mean, it doesn't change the course or direction of your program just with that one game. But that's still a long way off, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, if you're banking the whole season on one game or a whole career on one game, probably need to recalibrate your sights anyway, right? Because I think there's a decent chance they lose this game just based on where Nevada's program is at now and where Arkansas is starting from. I mean, to me, win or lose, it doesn't give me a great indication one way or the other about where Arkansas is headed for the balance of the season.
Absolutely. And honestly, guys, I just hope we have that game.
I'm with you.
I am so ready to be back watching football and covering football because, I don't know, I love the sport, and I just want to see the game actually played on the field. What I'd like to see is I'd like to see big strides from the Arkansas offensive line. I think they'll be better in a technique from a technique standpoint. I think they'll be better from a strength standpoint. I think they'll be better drive blockers, and they'll be better pass protectors. And I think Felipe Franks gives them an upgrade at quarterback and some mobility that they've been lacking. And all those factors right there make you a better team. I am concerned about on defense that they've lost, you know, three of their biggest contributors in Scuda and Sosa and in Cam Curl. And they're going to have to find some guys. I mean, I wrote about this today. They've got to find defensive ends who pressure quarterbacks. The last 2 years, that's really been kind of missing. And if Dorian Gerald's able to come back and they get some help from some other guys and Mattia Soli and some of these other guys improve, they should be better at doing that. But you've got to be able to find ways to improve in all kind of different ways to make a difference on Saturdays. And you know, I think Sam Pittman's been around football long enough to know, you know, let's let Kendall Briles, you know, teach this offense, and I'm going to help Brad Davis. We're going to get this O-line going together, and Barry Odom's got some a lot of experience. We're going to give the defense to him, and we're going to make improvements and see what that leads to on Saturdays.
Tom misses that press box food, Tommy. That's what he really
he misses. Those hot dogs.
He misses those hot dogs. That's what he really misses. So
Tom, we saw the Ivy League decide they're going to pass on this year. Do you think that has any bearing? Because we saw when they canceled basketball, the rest of the world kind of started to follow suit. I don't know if that's accurate. That's the narrative that some of the media want to push. I don't know that the world of basketball followed the Ivy League's lead then. Do you think they'll follow that lead now?
Well, I don't know. There's a chance. There seems to be kind of a growing steam among some national media members casting doubt upon playing the season as currently scheduled. And sometimes, you know, they're going to take the data that our health leaders, health administrators provide them probably right up through, I don't know when they would make their final decisions on playing the season. But, you know, they've got to get to this walkthrough portion that they've allowed in July first, and then probably sometime in August make some kind of call on I think y'all probably saw that Ray Tanner was interviewed yesterday and said something about aiming for about 20% capacity in the stadium, maybe a little bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a cautious approach to how many fans might be in the stands. And I don't know what the ultimate decision will be made, but people are going to have to make their own decisions in terms of fans. You know, am I susceptible and all that kind of stuff? And what am I going to wear and how am I going to behave at a game? And I just hope that they play football. I would like to see in the hottest of the summer months, we really start to get over the curve. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, and as I see, you know, like the governor comes out yesterday, and obviously we're having a surge or a spike or whatever you want to call it right now in Arkansas, but he talked about the future, and hey, we're planning on opening schools and putting kids back in the classrooms, and we'll have masks on, and there's a plan in place, and here's what we're going to do in just over a month. It seems like, hey, we understand we have a problem, but you know, we've got plans that we're going to move forward. I don't know if that's going to translate into sports, but it seems like at least from the high level here in Arkansas that starts with the governor, there's a plan even with these numbers right now that in a month from now, here's what we plan on to be doing. I think that will work with some other areas, including sports.
I hope so. And the question is, how long can you allow yourselves to be paralyzed by it? And then you take a real rational, you know, a cold look at what the numbers look like, what the death rate, you know, the mortality rate looks like. And, you know, see, a lot of people compare it, you know, to the flu. And it's true that, you know, some of the symptoms are similar and all that kind of stuff, and that the recovery rate, you know, the mortality rate from this is kind of less than the flu, but there's not a vaccination for it right now. And I would like to think that here in the coming months, a vaccination will be developed, and we can get on the other side of it. But there's so many factors that are involved, like the health of young people, and so many people have had it and even and don't show symptoms.
Or don't know they've had it.
Exactly.
Had it and don't even know they've had it. I bet one of us three have had it and don't even know we've had it.
Well, I don't want to name a name, but there's a person who works in the media ranks in Arkansas who in February got pretty sick and, you know, many of the similar symptoms and all, got over it and has wondered, I wonder if I had that early. Yeah. And so we don't know.
Yeah.
But it's...
I don't know if you can just go get the antibodies test or what you... But I bet if the three of us went and got the antibodies test, there's a good chance one of us three would have the antibodies.
You know what's, who's probably the most likely of the three?
I'm just saying it's if it's as transmissible and as contagious as we've been told, and it's been around as long as we now think, and it's probably been longer, guys, there's a decent chance that there's a lot of people walk around that's had it already. And eventually, mm-hmm. that's going to be the way you get past this is... You get to some kind of herd immunity that's been talked about. And I think, Tom, what we're talking about here is if you're going to move on, we just have to be responsible. Hey, if you want to go to things, you wear a mask. If you're going to be out in public and you can't socially distance, here are the rules. And I think that's what they're trying to get people to take a step towards. Hey, if you want to do these things and you want to be involved in these venues, here's kind of the rules here's the ground rules for this particular deal.
Yeah, and I do wish the people in crowds would be more responsible, because you just see pictures and videos of massive gatherings of people and some of them not wearing masks, and you wish they'd do better. When I think back, I was in Georgia. The Razorbacks played at Georgia. I think the date was the last day of February, and I flew back on March 1st. And by then, I mean, my sister and brother-in-law in Atlanta were already getting kind of wary about and they were talking about driving out and getting their daughter who attends UCLA, which they eventually did, drove across the country, got her in LA and drove back. But I flew back on that March the 1st, and, you know, there were already more people wearing masks, and I think it was really starting to get serious about that time. And yeah, as you pointed out, Tommy, I could have been exposed to somebody in ATL on March the 1st flying back. Now, I haven't shown any symptoms that I'm aware of, and it's been 3 months plus now, but who knows? I could have had it. You're right.
I don't know. To me, and it's just me trying to use logic, I think there were far fewer cases in March and back when we started canceling events, and we were just fearful. We were paralyzed with fear of the unknown, and we were looking to our left and looking to our right. Well, does this guy have it? Does this guy have it? Do you have it? Do I have it? Nobody knew, so we just canceled everything. And the reality was probably in March, very few people had it. And now it's spread, and now here we are in July, and more people have it, and we've had this surge. But the reality is probably then we were a whole lot safer than we are now.
Well, yeah, that's certainly the case. And But people who had it and didn't know probably were traveling around and leaving China and going to all these different places. And we like our freedoms here in America. And I think our cases, you know, have spiked in a lot of states because people were exercising their freedom.
And damn millennials, Tom.
No, I'm not willing to give up my freedoms.
Tom, you know what's interesting about all this? Like, so many jobs in sports media are contingent on college football. And you mentioned some higher sports media members, us, obviously, you, everyone else inside the state. For whatever reason, and listen, I get there's a sense not to be overwhelmingly positive because, like, when we're facing all this, like, it's hard to be that way. But, like, I'm not going out there and saying, oh, we're not going to have football, we're not going to have football, we're not going to have football, because I know that affects my job. Has it been weird to you when you see these big-time writers, these big-time analysts, it, like, consistently spread, like, the amount of cases, the amount of, and it's like, dude, your job is contingent on this. You realize if we don't have a season, we're all screwed. Like, has that come to your mind at all in terms of all this?
Well, I thought of it, and I've always kind of considered myself, you know, I don't write columns. I used to, but I don't write columns now, so I don't feel like my agenda, I've never felt like how I feel politically or about certain things I should push, and I always kind of felt that's the way media members should be. But we're seeing a lot more of that, certainly in our country these days. And it does seem to be that some of the writing from some of the national folks comes with this opinion. I mean, at the very early stages, I saw a lot of adamant voices that were no football until there's a vaccine. And I just thought that was a little bit hasty, written in April. And a lot of these people who are saying this have influence over conference commissioners and university presidents and the like. And I don't know what the ultimate outcome will be, but everyone understands the financial engines in this country. Football is a big part of that. And it's not just, you know, the athletic department. It's advertisers and it's hotels and restaurants. All kind of businesses are associated with it.
It's not a big part. It's the big part.
Well, like, I mean, but just think about the model, the business model for college athletics. These are at the root nonprofit organizations, right? So they're limited. Just think about the business structure for a minute and why this won't work. They're limited long term. They're limited to how many dollars they can retain in reserve because you're not supposed to be a for-profit business. So the cash you bring in, you're supposed to spend the vast majority of it going out on expenses. So when you get in a situation where now the income is in doubt, you don't have tens of millions of dollars of previous profits to fall back on as a feather bed. These college athletics are, that's why we're seeing Stanford cancel, you know, what, 20 sports or whatever it was. You know, 11 sports that won 20 national championships. Tom, these schools, athletic departments, aren't built around a model where you can retain profits for years and years and years. And their foundations may have some reserves, but these athletic departments, by design, by the IRS codes, aren't allowed to have tens of millions of dollars in a rainy day fund.
That's right, which adds a further complication to all this. And
that's why it makes it a house of cards, too.
That's right. I was going to ask you guys, I had seen a tweet about the Stanford thing, and I wasn't sure if it was real. And so when you started that last commentary, I was going to say, hey, did I read this correctly? Stanford?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about, this is Power Five and a major, major institution that
11
has tons of endowments, yeah, including in sports.
Dude, their endowment, Tom, I can't remember the figure on it, but it was so fat.
Well, And that's why when Harvard and these Ivy League schools want to talk about, you know, we're going to get to an article from the Boston Globe coming up wagging their finger at the rib-eating Southeastern Conference as it was laid out in the Boston Globe. That's what it said in the article. You tailgating, rib-eating people down there.
Yankee bastards.
You know, and they've got, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in endowment to run their org. And sports is way down the priority list at a place like Harvard or Yale. You know, in the South, it's the priority list is just a lot different.
What's
than it
biggest?
Is.
See, they crew up there, I think, right?
But they have hundreds of millions in endowment to keep their universities rolling. Not quite the case here.
No, and I tell you what, I do feel for university administrators because, as Hunter Yurecek pointed out on March the 13th, or he had a press conference on that Friday, maybe the 14th, somewhere in there. He pointed out that things had changed just hour by hour in those last couple of days. Well, that's happening every day now.
Mm-hmm.
Number of cases, number of tests, things change on a daily basis. The plans you made yesterday could be changed tomorrow. And
maybe by someone else.
It's absolutely, because they've had to come up with so many different scenarios to approach the season, and that cannot be easy. And there's so many different bodies that are reporting on this. Health bodies, the state, state health officials, conference officials, NCAA officials, and then on your own campus. It's a difficult thing to wade through.
It is. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. If there is a guy to wade through all this, it is Tom. Make sure you're always reading his stuff on Whole Hog Sports. Tom, we always appreciate you hopping on with us. Have a great weekend, man. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Sounds good. We could come up with a scenario, SEC Media Day scenario, or our favorite SEC Media Day's incidents. That'll be fun.
See y'all. Here's what I want to know Monday, Tom, all right?
Yeah.
The best thing you had with a garden tomato this weekend, all right?
I'll tell you all about it.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Talk about that Monday. Oh.
The toughest question.
What is going on?
The easiest answer.
Trivia!
Pick your category.
Light on medical knowledge, heavy on Broadway trivia.
Ty or Tommy.
Fight!
It's time for Trivia Thursday.
Right now, Tommy leads 5-3. We've done, was it Garth Brooks last week? Or was it George Strait?
No, you did Garth Brooks last week.
Garth Brooks last week? Yeah.
Because you watched the Garth Brooks documentary.
We've done Entourage.
Well, we weren't here last Thursday, but
yeah, two weeks ago, excuse me. We've done Entourage trivia. We've done old college football trivia. We've gone all over the place. Now we're sticking.
Masters was 2 months ago.
Yeah, Masters got obliterated in Masters trivia. But now we're doing Arkansas football trivia. Not the ones who should have won a Heisman Trophy in 2006 and 2007, but like middle tier, hard ones. And I have to
Felix
start
Jones.
No, don't start with me this one. We're almost done. Don't
Peyton Ellis.
So, all right. Go ahead, Jenkins.
It's widely considered that Darren McFadden is the greatest athlete of all time at Arkansas, but he is not. I'm just kidding. I was trying to draw a rise out of you.
I'm getting fired up.
All even
Lance Allworth.
Even killed right now. So
Arkansas has notched an 11-win season 3 times in school history. Which year was not an 11-win season? 64, 65, 77, or 2011? Which was not an 11-win year?
Okay, 2011 won. 64, 65.
1977 or 2011?
I'm going 65. I think the only team they lost to in
65 is correct.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't. I knew it wasn't the other two.
Yeah,
they went 10-1 that year.
Yeah,
I believe they lost with it. Did they lose to? No, they beat Texas that year. I didn't look to see who they lost to.
They beat Texas. They beat Texas.
I knew it was one or the other, and I didn't want to say because I had a 50-50 shot there, hoping you'd be wrong.
Where does Arkansas have a highest? Where does Arkansas have its highest winning percentage? At War Memorial Stadium, Razorback Stadium, AT&T Stadium, or at neutral sites?
War Memorial Stadium.
That is correct. We'll give you both a point for that. You said it about the same time.
Little Rock, baby. Feel different, even though they're about to close it down. Yeah.
Do you know what the winning percentage is at War Memorial? This ain't for points, but just for kicks and giggles.
It's got to be in the 70s, 78.
It's like points, just 70%. They're 319 and 126.
I figured somewhere in there.
What former Arkansas quarterback holds the school record for the longest passing play in school history? Longest passing play in school history. Was it Ryan Mallett to Jarius Wright? Nathan Dick to Lucas Miller? Matt Jones to Richard Smith? Or Ryan Mallett to Kobe Hamilton?
Matt Jones to Richard Smith.
That would be correct.
There you go.
It was at Tennessee, if I remember right.
It was Tennessee.
It was in 2003?
No, go back one more year. 2002.
It was in the 6 overtime game down the right sideline, if I remember right.
You know how long it was?
89?
No.
90-something.
92.
92 yards.
92-yard touchdown pass.
I remember watching. I can tell you where I sit.
Very good.
There you go.
In a single game, which player has thrown for the most touchdowns? Tyler Wilson, Ryan Mallett.
Hang on, back. In a single
game,
okay.
Which Razorback player has thrown for the most touchdowns in a single game?
Brandon Allen.
All right, we'll give you both a point for that. 3-3. You know how many he threw for?
7 against Mississippi State in 2015.
Very good. And he also, by the way, just for knowledge, he holds the second place, too. He threw for 6 against Ole Miss that same year. Mm-hmm. So,
But according to a lot of people, he was never any good.
Right. Yeah, but
I will say there's a big difference between 2013, 2014, and early 2015 BA, then latter half 2015.
The difference between him and Mallett and Tyler Wilson is Tyler Wilson and Mallett, those guys didn't have to play as young. I mean, they didn't have to expose themselves as young as Brandon Allen did in spots.
And it helps you had Jerry Sprite, Kobe Hamilton, Greg Childs, and all those guys around you. That's exactly right.
Who leads Arkansas in career touchdown passes? Matt Jones, Clint Sterner, Brandon Allen, or Ryan Mallett?
Mallett
is incorrect.
No, it's incorrect. Brandon Allen
is correct.
How many in what do you
Brandon
have?
Brandon Allen threw for 64. Ryan Mallett threw for 62.
Oh, wow. I knew it wasn't Two Matt more. Jones.
Which game in Razorback history holds the record for the most attended game?
Alabama 2010.
Very good. That's correct.
That's a good one.
76,808.
Yep, I was at that one.
Second place was Tennessee in 2006.
Either one of y'all at that one?
Nope.
No, nope. I'm not going to lie and say I was, but I feel like 150,000 people.
I was there. I had a credential, but didn't have a, it's one of those, the press box was jammed that day, sitting in the corner of the press box, and when Wingo scored on the wheel route, that was the loudest I've ever heard any venue.
I was going to say, I've heard, is it pretty consensus, Brady Toup's Grand Slam, 99 against Auburn, 2010 Bama, is that across the board, baseball, football, basketball, loudest you've ever heard it?
Well, I wasn't at the Brady Toup's Grand Slam.
So. Okay. Were you in 99 against Auburn? Because no. I haven't been in any of those games, but I feel like loudest crowd reaction.
The loudest I've been in Bud Walton was it the Oklahoma or the Texas game?
And won both.
You know, when they thought Pelfrey had unlocked the safe to greatness again. That was about a special 10 days that turned out to be fool's gold.
We had Rodney Clark on a couple months ago, and he told us that was one of the loudest basketball games he's ever been part of.
That's the loudest I've heard it. And there's been others. With Bud Walton, it's hard to separate because there's been so many.
Heck, you could go back to last year. Now, I know I'm not going to do this because I don't know. I don't have a
Kentucky
good justification.
Kentucky would be right up there with anybody.
Oh, yeah.
But, dude, yeah. This past season,
if you were at the Kentucky game, that's as good as it gets, too.
I was there. It was ungodly.
When you see Emmanuel Quickly, Kentucky basketball player, who won SEC, the SEC player of the year, by the way, is voted on by the coaches, put his fingers in his ears at that point. That shows you how
if you were at
loud
that one, that's as good as, I mean, there's others, but that's as good as it gets as well.
Just for knowledge, the 2006, so Alabama was number one, number two was Tennessee in 06, number three was Southern Cal in 06, and number four was Texas in 2004.
The 06 Southern Cal game was the hardest ticket I've ever seen to get, including the Bama. Tickets were easier to come by in the 2010 Bama game than the 06.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to that, because I think you told me y'all gave a giveaway over here in Fort Smith.
Chuck was still doing the radio show then, and we had some 50-yard line seats we gave away. Now, keep in mind, this was the 06 season, a lot of expectations, and you're playing Southern Cal. It's preseason. And 500-plus people show up trying to win 50-yard line seats.
Jeez Louise.
It was one of the biggest radio giveaways I've ever seen.
And they got rocked by John David Booty. It was close first
half. People were parked in Rogers Avenue trying to get in there.
That's wild, man.
It was unbelievable.
That was, and if you remember, one of the best hits in Arkansas history, Dallas Washington picked up the USC player and just crushed him in the ground.
Even outside the Bama game in 2010, people still had tickets. They were, high price tickets. Get this program for $500 and I'll throw in two tickets. There were no tickets in the air. There were nothing but fingers in the air before that USC
game. That's wild, man.
Crazy. This Razorback team ranks the highest in school history, scoring 37.3 points a game. Which team was this? I'll tell you the year of the team. They scored 37.3 points a game. Was it the 07 Razorbacks, the 2010 Razorbacks, or the 2011 Razorbacks?
2010.
Both of you are incorrect. It was actually 2007.
Seven?
They went that team? They scored 37 points.
That's according to the Razorback Record website.
I guess the OT, triple OT against LSU helps.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Not the 9-7 loss against Auburn that year, though. Good grief.
I would have thought 07.
Yeah, you and I both.
That's still that 07 team, as disappointing as they were in regards to expectations. It was a better team. We still got to the Cotton Bowl. I mean, by most Razorback standards, that's pretty good. But, yeah, beat by Missouri. But, coach gets fired. It's just a disaster of a year compared to where you thought you'd be. But in most years, you still had a pretty decent year.
Dude, I remember when we had Darren McFadden on, talking to him about the Alabama game. They had Bama. They could have had him on the road. You lost to Kentucky that year at home. You lost to Auburn. And who's the one I'm missing? You had four regular season losses. Who's the one I'm blanking on?
The one everyone remembers is you beat LSU at the end.
Yeah. I don't remember who the other one I'm blanking on is, but
I was making sure I didn't boot Topo. It was 2007.
Yeah.
That's aggravating that team went 8-4 in the regular season. Good grief.
And you wonder why coaches are so important. If the coaching had been straight with the 07 team, no telling what they could have accomplished.
All right, I got to look that up. It's driving me insane. Yeah.
Let's see here. Who ranks as the best kicker in Razorback history based on career field goal percentage?
Connor Limpert.
Connor Limpert is correct. He was 78% from the kick and field goals. He was 41 of 52. Who has the most career interceptions in Razorback?
Steve Atwater.
Steve Atwater is correct.
There you go.
You know how many he had?
13?
Nope.
15.
14.
14.
Okay. 14 career interceptions.
Well, we split it down the middle, yeah. Tom.
Who is the leading tackler in Razorback history?
Martrell Spate.
Nope. No. Sam Olajabutu, Ken Hamlin, Jerry Franklin, or Tony Bua?
Jerry Franklin.
That is incorrect.
Is it Bua?
It is Tony Bua.
Wow. Heck yeah, Tony.
408 tackles.
Tennessee that year on the road. That's who the other team they lost in 07.
Ties up 6-5 right now. Yeah. Let's see here. Who has caught the most touchdowns?
Marcus Monk.
That is correct. Yeah, I mean, 27 touchdowns.
Jeez.
Darren McFadden is the leading career rusher at Arkansas history with 4,590 yards. Who is second?
Alex Collins.
Alex Collins is correct.
Did not know that.
3,703 yards.
Okay.
Which team has Arkansas beaten the most all time?
Tulsa.
Tulsa is correct.
Played them the most, too, I think.
Yep.
I mean, you just think about, you go back decades. I mean, they probably played Tulsa 70 times or something like that. I don't know. I've played Tulsa a bunch just because of the regionality of it all.
Tie, you're down 8-6. How many Southwest Conference championships did Arkansas win? 11, 12, 13, or 14?
13.
13 is correct.
Jeez.
How many SEC West Division titles has Arkansas won?
Two.
Three.
Three. No, because they've been...
95, 02, 06, three.
They've won four. Yeah, 95, 98, 02, and 06.
They 06.
They didn't, well, 98,
they technically
were co-champions. That's technicality there.
How many losing seasons did Frank Broyles have as head coach?
One.
No. 0, 2, 4, 5.
Four.
He had two losing seasons.
The first one?
Yeah, I knew it was
the
first one.
The last one was 5-5-1.
I didn't count the 5-5 seasons because I was technically 500.
All right. Okay.
Losing seasons was 58 and 1967.
Okay. All right.
What coach has won the most bowl games for Arkansas? Petrino, Holtz, Houstondale, or Frank Broyles? Won the most bowl games. Ty, you need these. You're down three.
Broyles.
Broyles is correct.
Right.
He's won four.
Keep him going, Jenkins.
I didn't think it was Broyles because he probably didn't play.
This player holds the school record for the most passing yards in a single game. Who is that player?
Brandon Allen.
That is incorrect. Brandon Allen, Tyler Wilson, Clint Sterner, or Ryan Mallett?
Passing yards in a game?
Single game.
Tyler Wilson.
That is correct.
Yikes.
Had to be that five, is that the A&M game?
A&M through for 5-10.
Right. Yep.
Last one. This player holds the school record for the most career passing yards.
Holds the record.
Brandon Allen, Ryan Mallett, or Tyler Wilson? Most career passing yards. And
Wilson.
Wilson is correct. Boss man, you won again.
Got it done. For Tommy Kraft and Matt Jenkins, I'm Ty Richardson. We'll talk tomorrow, buddies.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer. 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.